It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Bear Bets Podcast is back. Derby week is here. I'm your host, the Bear, Chris Felica, joined by Jeff Schwartz. We'll be joined in a little bit by Matt Bernier of FanDuel TV and NBC Sports, who you'll see on the telecast this week, to get his thoughts, breaking down the Kentucky Derby as well. But Jeff, this is one of my favorite weekends of the year. 2 days of racing on Friday and Saturday. Tons of opportunities to make a score. And I'm looking forward to hearing Matt's opinions and getting his feedback on my opinion as well. So how is, as a novice type, yes, better, like, is the Derby something you've wagered on in the past, or is this going to kind of be like a new experience for you?
I have typically done what I think some people do. Most people that don't wager on horse racing very often is I text someone who's in the know. Hey guys, tell me what I should wager on. And they will send over a wager, and I will input said wager best as possible into the various apps, Bear, and websites, and then watch the race and hope that I've won the wager that I put forth. I mean, I've learned over the years, though, that, and we'll talk about this for best bets, that there's ways to do head-to-head wagering and other ways to sort of find some value or just wager on obviously a single horse to win the race. And so there's other ways to get it done, but that's what I'll do. I'm going to text you on Saturday while you're busy putting your 100th, 1,000th wager, whatever you're going to put in horse race. Hey, give me your best one for the day, whether it's a trifecta, superfecta, box, whatever you want to do with it. I will just do exactly what you tell me to do. Watch the 2 minutes, and then afterwards I hope that there is a winner in my account.
Well, we'll hopefully we'll do that. It's one of the fun things that going to the Derby is, being around all of your friends and people who might be like you, who don't necessarily bet on horse racing all the time. And they're like, how do I bet this? How do I read the form? Who do you like? How should I bet it? What do you think? And then watching the race and watching their reaction when you win, or maybe you just get beat at the wire. But that's one thing I kind of miss about not being at the Derby. And I remember one of my favorite Derby experiences was, I guess now 5 years ago in 2019, when I had Country House and I was at the race with Kirk Herbstreit and a bunch of friends, and it wasn't a great day. It was rainy and drizzly. And like you said, the people reach out to me who maybe I haven't heard from in a while. Hey Bear, who do you like in the Derby? And I said, okay, I'm going to give you, I didn't like Maximum Security. So I was giving people like a 5-horse exact a box. I'm like, it's $20 for a buck. It's $40 for $2. And I think it has a chance, if it hits, to pay a lot. So I gave people Country House. I gave people Tacitus. I gave people the Shug McGahey horse, and I can't remember his name right now. Game Winner. And there was one other horse there. So essentially you watch the race and Maximum Security winds up crossing the wire first.
Okay.
And literally of the 5 horses that I gave everyone, I ran 2, 3, 4, 5 with the horses that I had given in my 5-horse exacta box. And I was standing next to Kirk, and he kind of outlays the story in his book as well. He tells the story. So I'm not out of school here sharing the story as well, but we're and he's like, did we, and like before the race, I was like, I don't like Maximum Security. If he wins, I lose. And Maximum Security, of course, cross line finish. But so he gives me like this death glare after the race and starts throwing the tickets, crumbling them up on the ground. And got to remember, this is now like 7 o'clock at night, and we've been there since 11 in the morning. So there's been a lot of mint juleps, a lot of Diet Cokes, a lot of everything.
Yes.
Rain. So it's kind of gross on the ground. So he's throwing all his tickets on the ground. He looks at me and he looks out and he goes, he's like, what is it? And then he sees like the inquiry. So he's like, what does inquiry mean? And I'm like, inquiry. And I'm pissed off because if you followed Maximum Security and his trainer, Jason Service's story, Jason Service prison is, it was not going to be the Derby winner that you wanted. And he won the race. So I was mad that he won the race because it was a terrible Derby winner for the story. Cause he knew at the time the trainer was not on the up and up. So I was livid. So I'm cursing under my breath and Kirk's mad and Kirk looks at me and he's like, wait, what does inquiry mean? And I go, inquiry means that they're looking at the race. Something might've happened during the race. I'm sure it was nothing. They've never taken a horse down during the right after the race for anything. So it'll be nothing. And then Kurt, and then he goes to me, oh no, I saw it on the turn. Like the one horse nearly there was one horse that nearly like took him out and he took like clipped heels and the horse almost fell. I'm like, well, I didn't see it. So I start texting my buddy who is watching the race with Larry Collins who called the race. And I say, Eric, is there anything to this? And he's like, oh no, this is legit. This is real. He's like, no. Well, he's like, Warra Will got totally cut off and nearly went down. They could clipped heel. And he's like, this is going to be interesting. They could take this horse down. And I'm like, really? So I start getting excited. I can't remember if it was Andy Serling, who was a horse racing guy, or Bruno DeJulio, one of the better clockers out there, who said like, uh-oh, like they're going to look at this. And I remember sending Andy a DM being like, is this like, have it, like, what's going on? And he goes, oh no, this is real. There was definitely something going on. So we're sitting there waiting 20, I think it wound up being 22 minutes for the result to get put up. And they flashed the board off and then they reflashed the board on again. And Maximum Security, it's been taken down and put to 17th or whatever it was right behind Warra Will. And you could just hear silence all over Churchill Downs, with the exception of Arrow Box, who is just going crazy.
Because you won now.
We've got the win. We've got the exacto. We've got the try. I think Kirk had a piece of the super with the group that he was with. Had a pick four. It was amazing. Now the one problem for Kirk is I had all my bets on my app.
So he's to find the ticket tutorial.
Now we have to get down on our hands and knees amongst slop and whatever else and pick up these tickets that have been thrown onto the ground. So like
you find them?
Why we find them? The problem is they're all saturated and soaking wet.
No.
And now we bring them to the teller and the teller has to like punch in the codes manually. And Kirk had no idea like what this was going to pay. And
right.
I really didn't even know what this was going to pay. So like to see like Kirk's eyes like light up as she punches in these tickets, the amount that it was to win.
Oh yeah.
It was pretty funny, but that was a great day and you share it with a bunch of friends and you make a bunch of money and getting the text back from people who were like, I couldn't believe like what the exacta paid for like a $40 investment. That's why you're in it. You root for scores like this, and hopefully we can have another one this weekend.
I want to go to the Derby with you 1 year. I think that's not my new mission. I've never been before. I want to go with you 1 year.
Oh, it's a great weekend. It's a great weekend.
I feel like there's a lot of eating, which will be fun.
The best part about the eating is on Thursday night when everybody gets in, you go to Jeff Ruby's and on Thursday night and you're in. And then Friday usually is you get back from the Yokes a little later. So it's kind of, you just kind of either you get pizzas and stuff. You bring it back to the house after the races on Friday. Okay. And you sit at home and then you wind up watching the NBA and NHL playoffs and whatever other baseball is going on Friday as well. So it's an awesome weekend. So we'll have to do it one time.
Let's do it.
Speaking of doing it, what else is on your mind? Like football season, we got the UFL. We'll talk about that later. Playoffs
NBA crazy. Playoffs. Ooh, it is hard to wager on the NBA playoffs, buddy. You know how you go? Like I had a great March Madness stretch. Like, it was really, it went well for me. And I knew I was coming back down to earth at some point, and the NBA playoffs bear have taken me back down to earth. I've been hooked 3, 4, 5 times, missing, by a point here or there. I mean, I had the Knicks center in game 4 to go over 14 points. He had 12 at like end of the third quarter, got his 5th foul. Remember, he got 4 fouls like a minute of that game against Embiid, didn't play the rest of the game. I lost an under because of a foul in a 20-point game with 20 seconds left. Oh, buddy, you always remember the losses more than the wins.
Yes.
So I'm hoping it gets turned around. Had a little bit better luck as we record this on Tuesday. The Nuggets third quarter, I had Russell under. That went under. So I'm hoping we get into the rest of the week. And then my White Sox fade that we talked about last week, I'm doing every night, the run line fade. They've covered the run line 4 games in a row. They've won 3 of the 4. But, look, you have to go in waves. It happens. You have some good days, some bad days, some good months, some bad months. But if you stick with it, you have a plan, hopefully you end up with some more money in your pocket. I know we have a plan, Bear, for how to bet the Derby, though, so I'm excited for this.
Yeah, we do. And just because we're recording it on Tuesday, hopefully by the time you're listening to this, the Cleveland Guardians have beaten the Houston Astros on Tuesday night in Houston. And that Guardians most wins in March and April bet will get home. But we do have a plan to bet the Derby. We have a plan on information for the Derby, and to help us execute that plan is Matt Bernier of FanDuel TV and NBC. You catch him on the telecast on Friday and Saturday. But before he does that, he's going to spend some time with Jeff and I to break down the Derby. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Jeff and I are now back and happy to be joined by Matt Bernier, FanDuel TV, NBC Sports. You will see him this weekend on the telecast, one of the better handicappers out there. And what I like about Matt is he has a really good way of explaining things for the common man or woman or better who just happens to be dropping in on the Run for the Roses and the Kentucky Oaks as well. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Guys, good to be here. Thanks for having me on. A few days ago, it looked like it was going to be gorgeous both on Friday and Saturday. We'd have sunshine, 80 degrees, and now it looks like it could be a wet Friday and a wet Saturday. But, we still have a few days before things really unfold. Looking forward to the races, the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. What else could you ask for?
Well, let's start there then, because I think that was my initial viewpoint of the race, that it looked like it was going to be good weather. How do you handle track surface condition changes of the track? Like, I know it was funny, one of the things that I did in my Derby futures this year, I have a future on Just a Touch at 30-1. I had a future on Deterministic at like 50-1, and I played Mystic Dan at 40-1 solely because of this, saying if the track comes up wet, Mystic Dan is an absolute must use. Like, does this get you off of any horse, or maybe put you on someone that you may not have? Or you're just going to say it's an off track, someone's going to like it, someone's not going to, and I'm just going to handicap the race as I normally would?
Yeah, I won't take anyone out of consideration, but I will look at a horse like Mystic Dan, who, if it's dry by the time the Derby is run, I don't particularly like his chances, but he's got that one race in the Southwest, 2 starts back on that sloppy track or the muddy track down at Oaklawn that sticks out like a sore thumb. If you're going to get that and he handles the wet track that much better than everyone else, he may be the rare instance where a horse truly moves up on a wet track as opposed to just hating it a little bit less than everyone else. So I wouldn't downgrade horses. I would be more inclined to include others that maybe initially I was going to pass on.
How much does just previous performance in races versus kind of the potential of a horse in a race like this determine sort of where you think they stack up?
Well, especially this time of year, I think you have to keep the projection piece in the back of your mind, because these are 3-year-olds. I think the easiest way to kind of make an analogy would be, this is much more like March Madness than it would be the NBA Finals. These are the equivalent of 16, 17, 18-year-old human beings. They're still developing physically, mentally. For many of them, emotionally, they'll kind of throw a bit of a fit out there in some instances, as opposed to the older horses that you'll see later on in the year in the Breeders' Cup. They are completed projects. So I think you always want to have an eye on projected improvement here for the Kentucky Derby. At the same time, you can't just completely dismiss how fast they've run in the past. case in point is fierceness. I think it would be naive to think that he has a forward move in him off the Florida Derby. And we're talking about the morning line favorite at 5-2. But if he just runs back to the Florida Derby, he's lengths faster than everyone else. He could even regress and he's still faster than the majority of the field. You would need the others to take a pretty significant step forward and have him kind of come back a little bit just to narrow the gap some.
Yeah, I was going to bring up fierceness because he actually got helped today in that he gets another draw with Encino scratch, who I think Encino was going to be kind of near the lead and maybe speeding things up a little bit up front, maybe pressing fierceness. I don't think we're going to be, and basically what Fierce was out in post 17. And I think that was just more of a statistical anomaly than anything else. Like he's not going to win now because he's in post 16 as opposed to post 17. But I do think that if he gets away, he's going to win, but he's had a tendency to, when he's kind of been looked in the eye or when he hasn't had things his own way, whether it was in the champagne or whether it was in the Holy Bull there, like, he has a tendency maybe to throw in the towel. Like, does he have me? I was talking with a buddy of mine earlier today. And is he maybe have a little Bellamy Road in him? Remember 2005 favorite ran a monster buyer 120 in the Florida in the wood rather in his last prep before the Derby, won by 17 lengths, only two preps. Now you look at fierceness. He had fired the 110 in the Florida Derby, won by over 13, and he had only two preps. Like, how do you see the pace scenario playing out? And does it make you think that fierceness is super live here? Or do you have a good bit of concern with him?
You bring up the Bellamy Road comp. I've also heard the Life is Good comparison, another horse that Todd Pletcher had, where when everything goes his way, he's dynamite. But if he's got to overcome anything, he doesn't come with the same game. I'm of the opinion, if you really go through and you take a look at his five races so far, three times in the starting gate, he's been very settled. It's probably the best way I can put it. It's not as though he's, you know, amped up or anything like that. He's just settled. Those three times he goes off and wins by a pole. The two times he's lost, he's not unsettled. He's just kind of looking around a little bit. Maybe he's not focused immediately on the task at hand, and he throws in a bit of a dud. I can't help but look at him and say, you go throughout the, let's say, the past decade, California Chromes, the Justifies, the American Pharaohs. The commonality with all of them is the trip that they pulled in the Kentucky Derby. They're probably three or four wide around the first turn, down the backside, and around the far turn, but they're sitting off of horses that, for all intents and purposes, are inferior. My thought, and especially with the defection of Encino, who would have been one of the other horses I thought would be close, I just don't like the speeds to his inside. I don't think they're all that as far as quality is concerned. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say John Velasquez rides this race as if they're not even in it. Just park him out in the clear, sit off, let him find his stride. And at the top of the lane, if he strikes the lead, I just think he's going to be an absolute bear to run down. And, you know, if anybody wants to sit there and say you can't trust him, how do you bet him at 5-2? That's your prerogative. I understand it. I think 9 times out of 10, that would be my approach as well. I just look at the rest of this field and I go, they need to improve by, I think, relatively large margin to be relatively close to even getting into the conversation of beating him. So I'm actually kind of going the opposite direction and saying at 5-2, I think fierceness could be, we could look back Saturday night and say 5-2 was stealing.
How does a jockey change their strategy with a kind of outside post position versus where they're 1, 2, or 3 inside? Because obviously he's now down at 16, but no one at 17 has won this race either.
The post position scenario is vitally important for a race like the Kentucky Derby, particularly let's talk about Sierra Leone, second choice in the wagering. I think if you needed to call sort of an air quotes loser of the draw, the one Dornock and the two Sierra Leone are probably the two that are most compromised. Dornock is a horse that they wanted to go to the front end with anyway. Well, now you have no choice but to go because you're breaking from the one hole and everyone's going to come over on you down that first time by the wire. And with Sierra Leone, he's a horse that's going to come from farther off the pace. So you would think, well, maybe that's not a bad thing for him to be down toward the inside. My only concern with him, so many people have brought up the fact that fierceness has not overcome any adversity. Sierra Leone hasn't had any adversity really in any of his races either. He's been against the bias one time in the Remsen, his second start as a 2-year-old. But beyond that, he's had relatively nice setups for him. I know the pace in the Fairgrounds race maybe not have been off the charts fast. But my point is he's had free run, unencumbered kind of paths. He's been able to go on, find his stride and go on with it. I don't see that being such a candy setup for him on Saturday. I think he's going to have to overcome a little bit. And I'm not convinced it's 7-2 that he necessarily can do that. And conversely, you've got John Velasquez parked out in the clear. Yeah, you're going to end up carrying a little bit more ground. Maybe you run a mile and 5/16 in a mile and a quarter race. But if you don't have a straw in your path, I'd much rather take my chances with that trip.
You know, inside is the death knell. Like the risk of getting squashed and pressed up inside against the rail there is massive. And if you go back, I mean, Affirmed was the last horse to win for Post Two. And of course, remember, for people who aren't familiar with the starting gate at Churchill Downs, a couple of years ago, they changed from having two starting gates with 14 and then 15 and out, I think it was. And now it's just a 20 horse gate. So maybe it's a little bit better than what it used to be, but it's still not great. So Affirmed last winner from Post Two. But if you look at the 11 top five betting choices to break from Post Two since Affirmed last won, you finish 10th, 3rd, 3rd, 11th, 10th, 8th, 13th, 10th, 3rd, last, and 3rd. And you bring up a great horse like Curlin. Curlin was stuck down in Post Two in 2017. He was a generational type horse, and he could only manage a third place finish from inside there. He was a lightly raced horse. He was making his fourth career start in the Derby. Sierra Leone is making his fifth career start in the Derby. I want to bring up the horse that Sierra Leone beat in the Bluegrass, and that's Just a Touch. I think if you look at, go back and watch that race, Just a Touch was chasing a rabbit basically the entire way around. Said that one another Chad Brown horse that was entered in that race to kind of ensure a fast pace to get Sierra Leone to set up to get his late kick home. Just a Touch ran a great race, and he was daylight clear of the third place finisher. I think in this race, if you look at maybe Track Phantom, maybe doing a little bit more of the dirty work up front, maybe T.O. Password or Forever Young is up near the lead. I think Just a Touch potentially could fall into a really good trip here for Franck Giroux and possibly be an upsetter at one of those nice 10 to 12 type range. Your thoughts on Just a Touch, and feel free to say you hate the horse all because I just talked him up, Matt.
No, I certainly don't hate him. I think that talent-wise, he is among the most talented in this race. I keep having flashbacks, and I feel like I'm on a little bit of an island here, but I have flashbacks to last year's Bluegrass, where you had two horses, one in Verifying, one in Tappet Trice, who, I don't want to say it was a carbon copy, but it was almost the same scenario as Just a Touch and Sierra Leone, where Just a Touch was out there close to a hot pace. He just got run down by the horse that had really everything go his way in Tappet Trice. This time around, Just a Touch goes out to the front end. He's got to do all the dirty work. He puts everyone else away, and he gets run down by Sierra Leone, who, for all intents and purposes, had everything go his way. Talent-wise, I won't be surprised if Just a Touch ends up being one of the best horses coming out of this race. I don't know how you feel about him, Bear. You obviously like him. Some of the folks that I work with don't have any question about how far he wants to go. It's still lingering in the back of my mind. Is he really going to be a 10 furlong kind of horse, a mile and a quarter? Or is he going to be better at that sort of one turn mile, 7/8, maybe even, you know, you can get him out to 8.5 or 9 furlongs. But that would be my only reservation, because I agree with you. Otherwise, he really hasn't done anything wrong in 3 starts.
People love to wager on long shots in this race. 2 of the 4 longest shot winners have happened since 2019. Is this like a trend to watch? Is there someone you like who's a long shot? We know that people like throwing a couple of dollars on someone to get them rich.
Yeah, I think it's all circumstantial about how live are the long shots. You know, in years prior, the Rich Strikes of the world, go back to the Mind That Birds and horses like that. I think a horse that many folks may have looked at early on leading into the Derby is possibly a price upsetter or a horse that can get involved would have been Honor Marie. That price is going to evaporate. That's gone. He's been the talk of the talk down here. I like him quite a bit in here to run 2nd or 3rd, but he's probably closer to 12-1 than he is 20-1. If you're looking for a horse that is, I don't want to call him a rank outsider, but one that you got to squint a little bit or put a little bit of faith in his ability, I don't think Catalytic is impossible to run inside the top 4. He's extremely lightly raced. His first time going around 2 turns was in the Florida Derby. He was no match for Fierceness, but he effectively won the race within the race. if you want to sit there and question the field, I can't really argue with you. I don't think there was a heck of a lot in this year's Florida Derby, but we've seen lightly raced horses like this outrun their odds. And I don't think he's one that absolutely has to be involved in that hot pace early on. He's going to be at least 31. I can't imagine being less than that. And, but again, I'm not telling you he's going to win the race, but if you want to play an exact trifecta, I love the superfecta in the Kentucky Derby. He's one that I'm absolutely using throughout second, third, and fourth.
I actually used him Florida Derby Day and actually wound up catching a nice exacta there with him coming in second. But to echo the price point that Jeff had mentioned, if you look at further into the trifecta, last 5 years, six of the 15 horses that finished in the tri were at least 14-1. Four were at least 27-1. So even though you've had favorites and second choices occupying a couple of the other spots, you've gotten boxcar payouts in some of those exactas and trifectas and superfectas as well. I feel like another long shot that I like, and he maybe we might get close to the morning line. He might even be a little bit of an overlay, is Just Steel. I think he's kind of been an inside outside horse in terms of like his running style. Like, you know, he'll run a good race and he'll run a bad race. So he's kind of been a zigzag or in and out, whatever you want to call it. In this race would set up to be like an out race or a bad race. But if you look at his numbers and his form, either in the past performances or on the sheets, like he's one of the faster horses in the race. And I know Dwayne Lucas has not had a horse hit the board in a heck of a long time in the Kentucky Derby. I think it was Proud Citizen, the last one that did. This is a horse that just got beat, ran second to Muth, the Bob Baffert horse, who's not in the Derby. You can read all about that somewhere else if you want. We're only talking about horses that are actually here. But I think Just Steel might be another one of those price horses, 20-1 or north of 20-1, that might find himself into the try. And if the pace breaks down, he might find himself in the winner's circle.
Yeah, I mean, if you are someone who uses figures like Thoroughgraph, he's actually faster than a horse like Sierra Leone. He earned a 1 in that Arkansas Derby most recently. That would put him on par with the Japanese horse Forever Young. It wouldn't put him close to Fierceness. But again, if you're only looking for those horses to kind of round out things, you believe that it's whoever you like on top. If you're just looking for prices underneath, I think Just Steel could certainly be one of those. I don't know what you thought, Bear. My only concern with Arkansas Derby Day, Oaklawn Park on March the 30th, I thought a number of horses were making big, wide moves that day. So maybe that number, again, especially if you're a sheets player or Thoroughgraph, however you want to kind of look at it, I wonder if it's a little bit dressed up. But having said that, he still ranks, you know, his run 3 back in the Southwest, got a 2.5. That puts him right there with the Just the Touches of the World and some of these other horses. So at what should be, I would think, every bit of 20-1, Just Steel, I can certainly see him getting a piece. And he's actually one of the more fun storylines of the entire Derby, with 88-year-old Wayne Lucas doing the training and 25-year-old Keith Aspison doing the riding.
All right, how funny would it be? Well, I'm sure it would be very funny in the Aspison household if the kid gets the Kentucky Derby before his dad and now in try 26 to looking for his first Derby win.
We were talking about that earlier today, and I'm sure it would be a bittersweet piece, but I think if you really got Steve in an honest moment, I think he'd probably be rooting more for Keith than he would be for his own horse.
How much does experience of either, you know, riding a horse here, being a trainer, all those things matter in this race?
I think it's immense. I think this is the most important race as far as experience goes, because it is such an anomaly. This is not a race that we don't run anything like this in the United States. And really, there are only a few races run like this in the world. 20 horses, a mile and a quarter. You know, I made that analogy about, you know, the kind of the college age kids, and that's how old these horses would be. Many of them will never do this again. They'll never go a mile and a quarter. They'll never run in front of 160,000 people at Churchill Downs ever again. They may never run in grade ones again. So this is such an outlier that if you have the experience, both from a riding standpoint, and I think probably more importantly, from a training standpoint, knowing how to get a horse to a race like this, I think it's immensely valuable. It's why a trainer like Todd Pletcher makes a lot of sense. Todd's won this race a number of times. John Velasquez has won the race a number of times. Chad Brown, while he hasn't won the race yet, I think anyone that pays attention to horse racing on any kind of a common basis understands that, that Chad, it's not a matter of he can't win the Derby. It's a matter of when he's going to do it, not if. So I think having horses that are sort of put together by trainers and jockeys that have been here before, I do think that that does matter in a race like this, because it's such a one-off.
We mentioned in passing Forever Young, the Japanese horse, UAE Derby winner, history of UAE Derby winners and history of these Japanese horses coming over has not been great. Forever Young appears to be one of those, either you love him or you hate him. Before I give my opinion on Forever Young to you, I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I guess I fall in the middle. A lot of people just despise.
No,
this
you're
horse.
Not a no, Matt. Come on, this is
I know
extremes. One end or the other. You're not allowed to be like a have like two thoughts in your mind at the same time and be like down the middle in there.
I don't find him offensive. Look, his two numbers over in the Middle East on Thoroughgraph are fast enough to win this race, or close to it anyway, if you take fierceness out of it. I will say I appreciate that the Saudi Derby. I don't know if you saw this story, but on the plane ride over, apparently his barn buddy kind of beat him up a little bit, and he had a bit of a welted eye. And the fact that he won that race, really doing something he doesn't want to do. He's not a one turn miler. He is much more of a mile and 3/16, mile and a quarter kind of horse. Probably speaks to his quality. And then I thought the UAE Derby was, yes, it was a nice trip, but he was never a loser. I won't be stunned at all if this is the horse that finally gets Japan off the duck in terms of winning this race. But for me, from a gambling standpoint, I'm going to take probably more the latter stance with him, because I just think he's going to be an underlay. I don't think he's going to offer the price that I would need in order to be intrigued by him. I would want something closer to 15-1. I think he's probably flirting with single digits.
Yeah, I think if you look at him, I think if you look at Anna Marie, and I think if you look at Catching Freedom, those are the three underlays in the race, because those are the three horses I've commonly heard. I'm glad you mentioned about that trip to Saudi Arabia, because Randy Moss, one of your colleagues on the In the Money podcast with Peter Fornatal and Jonathan Kinchin, was talking about how he did not travel well there. It kind of beat him up, and the connections were kind of worried about the longer trip, now 7,000 miles from the Middle East over to Kentucky, and all the changes and the van rides needed to get to Louisville, and hoping that he came out of it okay. And if you look at his works over, I mean, traditionally they work their horses a little bit slower, but the video of the work that I saw this morning, it did not look like he was really loving the Churchill Downs surface. And I can only imagine in front of 100,000+ people with the noise, and maybe he doesn't break and then he's getting kicked back in his face. I don't know. The figures work, and I think Randy equated it to estimated it being around a 101 or so in that race. But if he wins, I lose. I'll put it to you that way.
The other thing with this horse too, apparently the connections are adamant that he doesn't like kickback. Well, I mean, that's going to be a bit of a problem on Saturday, because I don't think he's got the gas to make the lead. So if you have any kind of concerns about that, you're probably up against it.
Okay, Matt, you're someone like me who is wanting to put a little bit of money down, who doesn't follow horse racing. Maybe you're at the Derby for the first time and you want to be part of the crowd. How does someone wager on the Derby who doesn't really wager on horse racing that often?
Well, I think, as always, it depends what your end game is, right? If you just want to have a little bit of skin in the game, I think taking one horse and betting him to win, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you talk about the comparison. If you're going to bet on a game where your favorite is in the minus 140 range, your favorite on Saturday in this race is probably plus 250. So there's nothing wrong with that. Granted, you've got to run against 19 other horses and you got to deal with a number of different things. I'm of the opinion that you don't overthink this thing. If you want to have some skin, you bet to win. If you want to take a shot, say you're probably going to need more than $10 or $20, but if you want to put $100 or a couple hundred into this thing, this is the one opportunity of the year, even if there are some favorites that come inside the top four, that the superfecta, I don't typically dabble in that pool. That can be a life changer, not a year maker. If you get the chips to fall the right way, you know, Chris, you alluded to some of the names and some of the horses that have been involved with these superfectas and the prices that we've seen. You can have your top two choices, and all you need to do is catch one or two other numbers. And the next thing you know, for a dollar, it's coming back 15,000. So that to me, every year, the Derby, the real selling point for me is to take a shot in that Superfecta pool.
All right, before we let you go, I'm asking for your Derby pick. We didn't hit on the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, which is really a great race. You've got Tarifa, you've got Ways and Means, you've got the Juvenile Filly Champ from the Breeders' Cup last year. Just FYI, Leslie Rose, Torpedo Anna. Like the race on Friday is shaping up to be a really good race. Thoughts on the Oaks before we get your Derby thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, as each passing day goes by, I like Just FYI more and more. I liked her to begin. I like her now. She's been breathing fire here in the morning. She's kind of the buzz filly, her in Ways and Means as far as the Oaks is concerned. But Just FYI, the big piece for her, her plan to get to the Kentucky Oaks did not necessarily go according to that. They wanted to run her down at Gulfstream Park. She spiked a little minor fever the day of the race. They had to scratch her, and Bill Mott, her trainer, who's a Hall of Famer, he all but said the Ashland was simply, we got to get a race into her. For, in my opinion, for her to run as well as she did while in all likelihood being a short horse, and now to see the way that she's come out of it, I think she's sitting on tilt Friday. I think she's got a giant, giant chance to win that race.
Well, I lied. One more question before the Derby. Anything else in any of these major stakes races? There's so many of them on Friday and Saturday. Anything else from one of those many graded stakes races that stick out? Either a standout at a short price or a price horse. I know you like to fire some prices, so I'm sure you might have one of those.
Yeah, I like numbers. I think long term, as far as horse racing is concerned, you're better off taking shots with some prices. You don't need to be right all the time, but I think that's how you can get ahead. The race preceding the Kentucky Derby, race number 11, it's the Turf Classic. I think Far Bridge, maybe on numbers, doesn't look like he stacks up, but the run at Gulfstream Park, I was down there when he came back and made his four-year-old debut. There's no pace signed on whatsoever. The horse that went to the front said dawdling fractions, and this horse was still able to overcome that. He went and ran him down. He did so very comfortably. I think he's sitting on a big effort here on Saturday afternoon. The elephant in the room is the weather. We'll find out what the turf course looks like. And then even the race just prior to that, race number 10. So these are all part of the late pick five and number of these things. I want your take. I don't know if you've looked at the Churchill Downs or done the deep dive. I think Wayne Lucas and Keith Asmussen win a grade one this weekend. And I think it's in this race with Trackmate. Trackmate is a horse that he's only had blinkers twice in his career, a little bit of equipment on his head. They were the last two starts. The run two back at Oaklawn Park. He never changes leads, which is the lead leg that he runs with. Typically not a good thing, but he's able to overcome that and still get the job done. The last start, he's tucked in behind horses in the pocket down on the inside. Takes him a little while to change leads, but once he does, he absolutely exploded at the very end of the run. Now he's come out of that race. You got a bullet and 59 in your back pocket. I really want to see what Thorograph has to say about his number, but I can't imagine myself not making a fairly healthy win bet on him. I believe he's 12-1 on the morning line, the 7 Trackmate.
Yep, 12-1 morning line. And I think obviously the first question or the first thing that I notice is it's his first go in a graded stakes race. That's the first thing I notice about him specifically. And then the other thing I'm looking at is clearly you're going to need to beat Zozos, who hasn't run since the Breeders' Cup last year, runs at Churchill Downs where he's had success before. But I'm willing to try and beat Zozos, and Trackmate certainly is as good as anyone. And I think 3 Technique is another horse that you might want to look at in this race. Cutting back from a mile to 7 furlongs, he ran well over the summer at Belmont in the Nerid, which is a big stakes race in New York at Belmont at 7 at the same distance. So I have always viewed 7 furlongs as like a specialist type race. It's kind of it's that mid range between it's not really a route, but it's kind of an elongated sprint. And I love horses cutting back from like a mile to 7 furlongs. I think 3 Technique, that 9 horse, might be someone to look at in there. He hasn't necessarily gotten to Zozos a couple of times that they race, but maybe Zozos is a little short for his first trip back.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. I cashed on Zozos last Derby day. This is a much different situation off this kind of a layoff. There's also other gas in this race. Hoist the Gold has one way to go on the far outside. They've got to stand on the gas pedal with him. So, and you can even make cases for some of the other runners in there. Tejano Twist is a rock solid runner, typically runs in Arkansas. They're going to send him here. crushed me last year that he didn't get up for second. Not the greatest ride. I had a giant cold exacta there with Cody's wish over him. You know, no sense in crying over spilt milk. But I thought this was a race that maybe you could take a shot against some of the favorites.
All right. Derby time. I'm not going to put you on this spot. It's Tuesday when we're recording this. Obviously, we still have 4 or 5 days to go before the race. There may be scratches. There may be weather situations getting clearer. So I don't need to know, like, you're like, I'm not altering from this, but right now, how do you see yourself betting this race, and who ultimately right now do you think is going to win the race?
The race by itself, again, I sound like a broken record, but the Superfecta, this is the attack mode for this race. You take a shot, and I'm not opposed to, again, you said it. I usually like to take shots with some numbers. If fierceness shows up, he's winning. Your guess is as good as mine if he does. But I can also say the same thing about some of these other horses as far as trips are concerned and this, that, and the other. How do they handle the crowd? I don't know. None of us really truly know until they get out there and do it. So the only thing I can go off of is what he has shown he's capable of. And what he's shown is that he's lengths better than anyone else. And it's not, I think that's the thing that really kind of just is in my head. It's not that he's marginally better. He is a margin better. I mean, like it's really not that close on commercially available speed figures. So I'm going to key him on top in the Superfecta. I'm not using him anywhere else because I think he is a win or nowhere candidate. Yep. He's either going to run off the screen or he might finish 15th. Honor Marie on the win end, and I guess you could even say it in the exotics, he probably will be an underlay, but at the same time, he has touted himself so much that I'm not going to be so stubborn as to say, you know, I'm going to pitch him out and try and beat him. When in all likelihood, I think he's going to show up with a good effort. So he's actually going to be an underneath key for me in second, third, and fourth. I'm going to pick him second. Third, I'm going to go with Catching Freedom. We didn't talk about him a ton. I know he was kind of outworked in the morning by Encino, who was since scratched. Mm-hmm. Catching Freedom's never been a great workhorse in the morning. He just kind of shows up and does his job. And then in the afternoon, he comes with his big kick. And that path out of New Orleans has really been, I think, the most productive over the past 5 or 10 years. I think he's coming into this race in good form. I picked him third, and then I'm going to go with Catalytic, take a bit of a stab in there with the Safi Joseph runner for Jose Ortiz underneath to finish fourth. So right now, subject to change if something crazy happens, but I'm going to go Fierceness over Honor Marie, over Catching Freedom, over Catalytic.
That sounds like a good enough strategy as well. But I the one thing that I completely agree with you on, Fierceness either wins or is nowhere to be found. I think that's going to be the way to go. I think if he clears, he wins. If he doesn't clear, I think we're going to be in a situation where he's a little bit further up the track. So, Matt, I appreciate you taking time on a busy week to join Jeff and I. Best of luck this weekend. Hopefully the weather will cooperate and we're all going to have a great day.
Guys, thank you. Appreciate it. Best of luck with everything you play this weekend.
Appreciate Matt for joining us there. A ton of information. And that's the best thing about horse players, at least in my opinion, is getting different people's opinions. You may not like a horse. Someone else may like a horse. And listening to what they have to say may get you to go back, take a second look, and maybe you stumble upon something that you missed the first time. So Matt mentioned something about Catching Freedom and one of Brad Cox's other horses, he had Encino, who was scratched, and Just a Touch, who I like in the race. Cox has been his trainer, Brad Cox, has mentioned about how he really needs to break better in his races. And that's something that if he doesn't break well in the Derby, that could come back and haunt him. And he's really kind of a grinder. So Derby's kind of hard on closers sometimes. Can he grind out a trip to win this race? Maybe not, but I know Matt said he does like him underneath. He does feel like kind of an underneath type horse, in my opinion. But I do know a lot of people do like the horse. So best of luck to you for playing Catching Freedom. But I, like I said, I agree with Matt. I think if resilience, if Fierceness runs his race, he wins. But I would take a look at Just a Touch. I would take a look at Justeel. I would take a look at Resilience as three other horses that I do think could win the race. I'm against Sierra Leone just in that post. I think it's going to be very hard for him to win from there. And I did mention earlier, again, see what the, I'm not going to make any final decisions on how I'm exactly betting the race until Friday or Saturday. Once I get a better grasp of the weather, like I said, I think Mystic Dan is a horse that if the weather does, if it does open up and the track doesn't dry out by the dirt by post time, Mystic Dan is someone you're going to want to include in your tickets as well.
All right. Good wrap up there.
Well, we try to make it.
Look, I've never seen you more excited for anything. You sent me like multiple pages of notes. Football season, I don't hear from you all week. We just record a podcast on Thursday after you have your salt bagel with ham, egg and cheese. And in this instance, I may or may not have asked for it either, but you sent significant amount of notes back. So I know how excited you are for all these wagers. Do you want to get into our best bets now when we'll hit a little UFL after this?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's do your best bet, Fred. Your Honor.
Okay. The best advice I've ever gotten for gambling on horses was from our mutual friend, Bill Krakenberger. I asked Bill last year, like, how do you do this? He goes, the only way to do this for a novice is one thing Matt said, right? Just bet on one horse and be done with it, right? But if you want to find maybe the best value, you look at head-to-head, right? You can wager on head-to-head matchups or three-way matchups as well, right, Bear? And then you look at the board, and you see where there are a little bit of anomalies. So Sierra Leone is right kind of odds, right, depending on where you are in the day with Fierceness. And yet in a head-to-head matchup, plus 115-ish, plus 110. So I'm just going off of the odds there. You mentioned, Matt mentioned the inside post, number two, not great for that horse. But if Fierceness doesn't start well, right, as we talked about, then that horse is done. So Sierra Leone finishes well, right? I'm right on that, right? I have that research right. Yep. So got that right. If the horse can get out and get away from the crowd, hopefully finishes fast. So I'm just going off of the odds of this. It's a good way to do this, guys. Like, just go look at head-to-heads and see where the overall race odds are and try to find some anomalies in these matchups.
So I mentioned it in the conversation with Matt. My best bet is in one of the undercard races on Saturday. It's the sixth race on Saturday. It's the Derby City Distaff, the number 10 horse Vava, 3-1 morning line. Hopefully we'll be somewhat close to that. Maybe in the 2-1 range. Hopefully, I'm hoping. Just missed it, Keeneland, last out. She's 2-for-2 at the Churchill surface, on the Churchill surface. I can't speak today. Her trainer, Cherie DeVoe, is having a great spring so far. So number 10 horse Vava in the Derby City Distaff is my best bet of the weekend. And I did find one matchup. Again, I don't know if this matchup, this head-to-head, is available everywhere, but just because Jeff gave out a head-to-head and I finally found one. If you look at Derby head-to-head matchups, Just Steal, the horse that I had mentioned, DeWin Lucas's horse, I saw it plus 108 versus Stronghold. I think Just a Steal being a closer, Stronghold exiting what is not one of the better Santa Anita Derbies in history. I like Just a Steal at the plus money there. But
all right, we got our bets in.
We did. Hopefully they'll catch, and hopefully they'll be as good as our as the draft best bets. With Joe Walt getting there at 5-1. Draft was fun this year. We actually, after the abomination of last year, last week was good. So now the only football we have to look forward to for the next couple is UFL, and we've got a wagon in the UFL in Birmingham. A couple weeks ago needed to come back. They were in a game, and then they again showed why they are the cream of the league last week. Just an absolute blowout win, and they are so much better offensively with Adrian Martinez, a quarterback.
I
think they are much more explosive on offense with him, and I think that showed last week. Look, it's good to have two guys who can play, but I think once you get to the playoffs, I think you might see a situation where the every other game type situation changes, and he may just ride with Adrian Martinez.
We talked about this, I think, 2 weeks ago, and we did a little UFL podcast, right, about how the two quarterback system, if you have two quarterbacks, you really only have zero quarterbacks, right? And then that's the game that they changed and went to Martinez. And since then, you know, they had a late field goal 2 weeks ago to win against DC. But since then, their offense has taken off, Bear, and you have to do it that way. You only have one quarterback is the way to go. So I think the question now becomes, can anyone beat them? And we both put down futures on Birmingham earlier this week to win it all, and hopefully playing that off at some point if we have to in the future when it comes to the championship game.
Yeah, that's the way to do it right now. They haven't lost in a calendar year, winning out last year after not only say a super slow start, but a slow start. They had overcome some injuries and stuff.
Yeah,
and ultimately wound up winning the title, and then off the start that they are this year, they are clearly the best team. I think everybody would probably agree that St. Louis is the second best team, and
yes,
you're probably getting a very likely St. Louis Birmingham UFL championship game. But if you can lock in the Stallions right now at around plus 150, 130, 125, I saw them 170 before last week. I'm sure that's gone, but you can still get around plus 125 or so, yeah, on Birmingham to win the title. They're going to be a bigger favorite than that come the championship game. They should be win their the divisional game to get to the title game and likely face St. Louis. So, like, I think that's a good bet, and you can play it. Whereas then you're in a situation where they're in the game, they're favored by, and you can get more than plus 125 on the take back with St. Louis, or you can just take St. Louis plus the points and play for a little bit of a middle. I don't think there's anything wrong now with just riding the Stallions, yeah, playing right now, grabbing that future price for what the best team in the league is.
Just go for the middle of the championship game, man. Just find a way to make two wagers, right? So
yeah,
that's maybe how I would play, or the plus money either side, and you come away with something. But yeah, Birmingham hasn't lost in over a year now on calendar in two separate leagues, Bear. They are well coached. They have good football players, and they'll be in the championship game.
Yeah, I think they should be as well. And maybe if you're looking for a middle, maybe you get lucky. Maybe they fall behind or they start slow in the championship game. You can get an even bigger number on the underdog in that game.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, I like it. We got a few more weeks to kick that around, but you should consider making that wager now. So that'll do it for another another week in the book. Kicked around the Derby, kicked around some UFL. Fun week. Hopefully our best bets get there. Appreciate everybody again for downloading, rating, reviewing, subscribing, listening, checking us out on that YouTube channel. Is always a fun watch to get a peek at our emotions as we're listening and kicking stuff around. So for Matt, for Jeff, I'm Bear. Always remember, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win.